Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. St. Louis Public Radio's town hall meeting drew a capacity and diverse crowd Monday night at the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. The discussion focused on the recently released Call to Action report from the Ferguson Commission. That report included nearly 200 recommendations for dealing with the racial and social justice issues that divide the greater St. Louis community, issues that surfaced following the shooting death of Michael Brown. They include significant police reform as well as resolving economic and other social inequities. With the report comes the question, where do we go from here? What happens now? On yesterday's St. Louis on the Air, we began the town hall conversation asking whether St. Louis, with its long history of racial polarization, is capable of meeting the challenge raised by the recommendations. During dialogue between the audience and panelists, there was consensus that it can, but there is widespread belief that it will take time and that it will take a renewed commitment from government and the community itself. The panelists were Willis Johnson, pastor of the Wellspring Church, James Knowles, mayor of Ferguson, Rasheen Aldridge, the youngest member of the Ferguson Commission, Byron Watson, veteran police officer and Ferguson Commission member, Terry Jones, professor of political science and public policy administration at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Also with us, St. Louis Public Radio reporter Jason Rosenbaum. The most emotional moment came from Pastor Johnson, showing frustration and anger over the status quo.
As I've lived in this community and as I've shared and have helped to bring about, I think, enterprise, it's very discouraging when people allude to the fact that when you decide to take leadership and action, that there's always a reason why it's not yet okay. I've lived in this community over 4 years, and I'm sorry. I happen to pastor a church that owns a home in this community, and by default of me being the pastor of the church, I have the right and the privilege and the opportunity to live in that home. It's called corporate-sponsored living. It's a parsonage. And yet, I have been told that I'm not eligible or worthy to do things in this community because I'm not a homeowner. That's 21st century code language. I ran for school board in this community, and I was, in some circles, made to be questioned, were called to question why I would want to run for school board, because I did not have children in the school district. That was used to speak to two things. One, to speak to the fact that at the time I was running, I was not married, and so, you know, whatever that means to be married or not married, but particularly, it spoke to the fact of saying that I obviously could not have concern or did not have stake. And I know I'm taking a little bit of time.
That's all right.
But I said many times over that the children of this congregation, those are my children. And so I just say, and I have enough respect that I want to treat somebody else's children the same way I pray somebody's treating my children over in Northwest Indiana every day. So I say that to say that we have made some stride. There are people who haven't talked to each other for a while or ever at all who are now talking to each other. To God be the glory. But we still, if not in some instances, what this time and this trauma has caused in this community at times, and this is not the mayor's fault, this ain't the police chief, this is us fault, our own thing. We have, in many cases, become even further entrenched in our biases, in what we think makes us more vested than others. So I hope, and I've taken a lot of time, I'm so sorry, but it's personal at this point.
Forgive me, Pastor, but what I'm sensing in the comments you just made is more than frustration. I'm sensing anger. For the benefit of our listening audience, he is nodding in the affirmative. Well, is anger the way to get out of this mess that we're in?
No, it's not. But as we've said on many occasions previous in this space, you gotta acknowledge and accept how somebody feels. And we have taken the humanity out of this whole experiment of of community. I mean, even this is, these are not respectful to the commission. These are not just simply strategies and recommendations. These are, in some cases, literally lifelines or shields of protection or reservoirs of resource, literally water for the sustenance and substance of people to be able to not just live, but to be respected and treated and honored to live as all of us are inalienably gifted to live. And it gets tiresome trying to explain to people why in the hell it's important that you let me live.
Pastor Willis Johnson of the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. As the discussion continued, I wanted to know if it's possible to identify a single leader in our fragmented community, someone to carry the banner on important issues and affect change. Professor Jones responded.
We often have delegations from China come to the UMSL, and one of the questions they ask me when I talk about St. Louis is, who's in charge? And my answer is, nobody's in charge. They have a very difficult time understanding that concept. The follow-up, though, is if nobody's in charge, in some extent, everybody is. But we need to figure out how we fit into that equation.
Yeah, Jason.
To kind of bounce off this point, after listening to the very powerful response that Pastor Johnson said and also your response, Mr. Mayor, the thought popped in my head, obviously there's been a conversation in Ferguson happening for a year plus, and it hasn't always gone the way everybody has liked, but there's clearly been a conversation. My question that just spurred to mind is, are these same conversations happening in Wildwood or University City or Ladue or St. Louis City or any of the other cities in the region? This Ferguson report, while it's named after Ferguson, was meant to be kind of a snapshot of the entire region. And the reason I was, I guess, pessimistic at the first, or at least stuck a pessimistic tone, is even if we just focus on Ferguson, there's a whole lot of other communities that probably need to have the same conversation that's going on right now, and I'm just not sure that they're having it. I mean, did you get that in when you were talking as a commission?
Byron.
Well, one of the things, if you followed, we had 17 town hall meetings where we actually were in different locations from St. Louis City to always out in St. Charles County. We tried to include as many people as we could geographically, as much as we could. We had a very transparent commission as far as a website. And, I mean, information was there for those that were looking for it. We tried to make ourselves available. I know myself and Rashid, we have been out for the last 9 months talking to anybody who wants to listen to us. We want to be heard. We think that this is something important to be heard. We've made ourselves available in 17 different strategic locations that we looked at. And I think Clayton was close to U-City, so we pulled in U-City there. Each one of the locations, we seem to find people from around the areas that are not in Ferguson, even though this report is named the Ferguson Report. We had to go through Ferguson in order to get to where we're at. So that's why it's called the Ferguson Report. It's not because we're focusing just on Ferguson. But before we can get to the region, we've got to go through Ferguson.
Mayor Knowles?
Well, I think Jason will tell you this has been a rub of mine for a long time, that unfortunately when you call it the Ferguson Report, people outside of Ferguson are glad to dismiss it as Ferguson's problem. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that is, I know you have paid a lot of money to a marketing company that should have probably told you a better way to market your report to the region than calling it the Ferguson Report. I mean, Rasheen, you're a young guy, but even when I was younger, you know, I'm another 10 years older than you, but when I was in high school, you know, even 10 years before you were in high school, you know, we all knew, you know, where not to drive, you know, when to slow down, you know, the issues with problems in police departments that, you know, people were concerned about. You know, people have been complaining about this. Post-Dispatch had, you know, a five-day, five-page article a couple years ago on the Muni Shuffle, and nobody did anything about it. Nobody's done anything about it. And these are things that the legislature's not talking about. These are things that the county government's not talking about, and there's no reason why the county government shouldn't talk about this. To say there's no leader in the region, there is not one, but you have a one-party rule of a county. There is no threat to the county executive or the mayor of St. Louis to get up and just charge headlong into anything. Nobody's going to run against them and beat them. Take up the standard and run with it. I mean, so to say that there's no leader, there could be, and there should be, somebody who's going to take up that banner. But, I mean, again, unfortunately, when you go out to West County, when you go out to South County, when you go to other places, they look at this as a North County problem, they look at this as a Ferguson problem or a city problem, and it's a regional problem that affects us on getting economic development here. It affects our standing in the national marketplace, in the global marketplace. And until it hits their pocketbook or until we find a way to connect with them, we're not going to get that change, because that change has to happen at a level broader than just North County, because we're not the policymakers that can do it. Individual communities can. Ferguson's trying. We've still got a lot to do. But you know, there's a lot of other communities that could still take those steps, what they can do. And right now we're not seeing it. It's easy to pawn it off as the Ferguson issue.
Most of the questions we've been getting from the audience relate to the Missouri legislature. So let's go back to that, and we'll bring up Elliot R. from University City, who has a question or comment relating to that.
Political systems obviously are like a spider web, and no corner of it can move very far away from its base of support. And so if we are depending so much on the legislature, given the state of things at the moment, it seems like we need some new representatives. And to my mind, that echoes the statement that we need change among the whites and in the suburbs, changes in attitudes and consciousness raising. And I guess I would like to see among the commission's recommendations, kind of taking that step backwards, you know, what are not just individual conversations, but systemic programs, whether it's with schools or with churches, that can bring about some of that attitude change. I fear that too much of what people are seeing on the news, anger in the demonstrations, as much as I understand them and support them in a way, I'm not sure that they don't anchor some white folks more deeply in conservative attitudes. And I think the statement by Pastor Johnson, I thought, was very powerful, and I think would move many white folks to be more supportive. And so somehow that kind of a message needs to be out there much more and a part of broad educational and consciousness-raising efforts.
Anyone care to comment on that? If not, we'll move along. I will just point out, in terms of some of the early reaction to all of this, and I don't want this to seem like a downer or negative, but Antonio French, the city alderman, who's spent a lot of time here in Ferguson, particularly after the Brown shooting, he says identifying a problem and fixing it are different, and I think we've alluded to that this evening. Senator Marie Chappelle Nadal, whose district Ferguson is in and who is obviously a senator, puts the chances of getting anything done close to zero. And that's coming from a legislator. It takes us back to where we had the early part of our discussion about this. It seems to me a kind of a pessimistic pall that is beginning to set in, even now.
Well, you look at what happened in the legislature last year. Yeah, Senate Bill 5 did pass, and that I don't want to say that that was inconsequential, but there were a whole lot of other bills that were law enforcement related or quote-unquote inspired by what happened last August that passed in other states. For example, Texas passed a pretty comprehensive body camera bill that also funded body cameras that didn't end up passing in Missouri. Not only body cameras, but also use of force, a police shooting database, et cetera. And I think that kind of the reason that the people are pessimistic about the legislative part is because last year, the legislature didn't really show a track record of really picking up the ball and running with those issues. So what makes you think that just because of this report coming out that they're going to change their tune in 2016?
I think, once again, you're right on it, Jason. That's our concern as commissioners, that this is going to be left to people that aren't going to have as much fire and energy as the commission had. We were just basically the fact finders. We don't have any powers. We don't have anybody to force to do any of the things that we're recommending. These are just recommendations based on input from our community. This is not from the Ferguson Commission. This was basically from our citizenship and experts throughout this country that came to us and gave us these facts and the data that we determined the changes that needed to be made. So getting to your point, the biggest fear and hearing what the state senator just said, I would hope that zero would not be the finding. I think that would be very discouraging. I think with 189 different charges, if we don't get one of those passed, I think I would be more shocked than disappointed. I think that there are some things there that need to be changed, and there is legal foundation for it to be changed. You know, Tennessee versus Garner. This is a Supreme Court ruling. This is not something you should be able to debate about. You have to follow the Supreme Court. I mean, why are we debating that? Why didn't that go through legislation last year?
I think, Don, if you looked at the 189 recommendations and tried to craft a legislative agenda for the next session of the Missouri General Assembly, you could identify at least 10, maybe as many as 20, that if you crafted them well and you had some energy behind them, you could get a decent percentage of them through. Mm-hmm. Certainly, Medicaid expansion is not one of those 20.
Well, I was just going to mention that because that's one of the recommendations.
Making modest progress on early childhood education and making it closer to universal would be an example of something that would be a major systemic change and does have bipartisan support.
I think to Dr. Jones's point, and I was almost 8 years as a registered lobbyist and worked in the legislature, and I met with a couple groups of protesters early on who were protesting outside the police department, and they were out there screaming about indicting Darren Wilson, and they were chanting about Bob McCullough, and I brought them into the firehouse, and I asked them, why are you standing outside the Ferguson Police Department chanting about getting Bob McCullough to do something? You've got to know who your audience is and who the change agent is you're trying to influence, and you've got to target that, make a plan, and go for it. Because Bob McCullough doesn't care that you're standing at Andy Worm's lot screaming at the Ferguson Police Department if you're trying to change his mind. And I would say the same thing. If you're going to make legislative change, you need to, as the doctor said, make a legislative agenda, focus on those things that you probably can't. There's probably some low-hanging fruit that you can get. You've got to identify those legislators and be smart about it. This doesn't mean going and storming through every legislative door and chanting and disrupting their office just yet. But making a plan, finding those stakeholders that can work with you, and you might be able to find some allies, cultivate a real movement going on in the legislature. You know, for years we always said, you're not getting anything passed in less than 5 years. If we had clients that would come to us and say, hey, we want this bill to pass, minimum 5 years is going to take from the time you come to me with an idea and the time we get the legislature to pass it. And that's just what we've always said in, you know, running around Jeff City. Now, nobody wants to hear 5 years for the first 10 items to get done, but I think there's real momentum, there's real energy, and if you're smart about it and you do the groundwork before pre-filing in December, I think Dr. Jones is right. You can get some real traction. I think there's a number of low-hanging fruit.
I'm going to ask Emily D. of Ferguson in the audience to come on up, who has a question and a comment. I'll just also point out, Terry, you mentioned Medicaid expansion as being one of the things the legislature is not going to do. Another proposal from the commission is a $15 an hour minimum wage. That's probably not going to happen either. Emily, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Emily, and I'm a Ferguson resident. I wanted to first thank the commission for the tremendous amount of work that you have done and the time you've put into this. But I also want to say, as a Ferguson resident, that it's really hard not to feel left out after being the impetus for this movement and for this commission. We're just not getting traction in Ferguson the way that people get when they stand in front of the Ferguson Commission and get listened to and get heard and get their ideas pinned up on a board. We've listened to Mayor Knowles disparage the Ferguson Commission the same way that he disparages the Department of Justice and their investigation and their demands for change. And so I'm asking you, what's your advice for how we as Ferguson residents work through that level of obstruction that we're facing to implement your calls to action and more importantly, how we do it while the words of our mayor continue to drive the wedge of this racial division deeper into our community, a wedge that is literally the kind of wedge that is literally killing people all across this country.
Mayor, would you like to respond, and then we'll get some commission response as well.
Sure, and I will say you've been at many town hall meetings, city council meetings. There's been a tremendous number of things that the city has done, continues to do, reforms that no other place is making, reforms that have come from our town halls, come from the citizens, come from some of the same things that the Ferguson Commission has suggested. The fact that we haven't done everything that you or any other group has asked for is just part of democracy. So I don't know what to tell you other than that. At the end of the day, there are people who don't think like you, who think totally different, and they maybe not get their way either. But I don't think it's fair, again, and we've had this conversation before, to suggest or act like Ferguson hasn't made a tremendous amount of change, how Ferguson has not done a tremendous number of things to both our courts, our police department, our city government, etc. And as I've mentioned many times before, it's not a destination. This is progress, is a continuous movement. And we continue to do that. And we will continue to over the next however many years. It's a continuous self-improvement as a city. I know that not everybody feels that they're getting everything they want, or maybe even what they want. But again, the city of Ferguson, its city government, has done a tremendous amount and will continue to do a tremendous amount as we go forward.
Rasheen, go ahead.
Yeah, bringing back some old days in me. Okay. We got to continue to fight. We can't give up. We have to continue to fight. The ones in power don't care about the change that we desperately need and we want. Going back, you said the mayor said, oh, the commission is nothing. Maria said, you know, nothing's going to get done. And Antonio, people are just coming up with ideas. Three people who is in position of power already just saying nothing's going to happen. And that's not the mind frame we need, and that's not the mind frame that the people on the ground have. And note, I can say Maria has been out there since day one, always on the ground with the protesters, and I have stood by her several times. But we also need to start thinking about getting some of these old-minded people out of office. It goes back to a little bit of ownership on us. Maybe for so long that, and I know you said you also know driving down West Florissant, but the difference if the mayor, or someone, let's just be honest, someone of not the color of me drive down West Florissant, they're not going to be pulled over like I am. So these are the issues that we know about and that we continue to see and that we continue to be affected by. And the people in power say, I hear you, but do nothing. And we only see them when it comes time for election time. And these are people in power, once again, who have a lot of power to change some policies locally. We're not talking Jeff City. We're talking locally as well. So we need to get educated. We need to run each other for office just as well, because it's an important position. And we don't want anyone in that position who does not represent you. We know who they are. We have seen how they have acted, not just after Ferguson, even before Ferguson, because this isn't anything new, is what people fail to realize. If it wasn't for people getting upset and going to the streets, there wouldn't even be a commission. So that's why we got to keep fighting.
To follow up on Rasheed here, one of the things, the theme that I heard over and over at all of these town hall meetings, and I think it's something that Rasheed and I have taken up, is a voice for those that are voiceless. We have some individuals who ask us, all we're asking for is hope. You know, when a person loses hope, Rasheed and I have spoken to many of those individuals, and you wonder why the behavior that you see from some individuals, if you've never been hopeless, if you've never been in a position where things are so grim and that you have no hope, that's a human need everybody needs to have hope. When you take hope away from a person, that person becomes inhuman. In other words, they don't feel valued. And if they don't feel valued, don't be surprised if you see unusual behavior from this individual, because we have to give up hope in order for them to be able to feel like they're a part of this. We talk about democracy, we talk about inclusion, but there's a lot more people on the outside than there are on the inside, and I think we need to fix that.
I'd like to come back to Rasheen with regard to the issue of youth. And it was the second, according to our audience here in the poll that was taken as they came in, the part of the report dealing with youth was the second most highly voted upon subject, if you will. Give me some sense, as a young person, of what you were hearing during those 2,000 interviews and what have you, and during 9,000 hours or whatever it was. What were you hearing about youth that you think is going to galvanize young people to do the kinds of things you're talking about? The street action presumably is over. Now it's got to be the ballot box, I assume. Is that what you're saying? Pick up on that point. You're not agreeing with what I just said.
It goes back to what my commissioner said, the hope, and mainly with young people, that the hope is gone. I mean, when you live in North St. Louis City and there's no opportunity, you live in, let's just say, the Fifth Ward, because I know that's my ward, there's one playground, you go to Jefferson Elementary, and I went to Parkway, but I went to Jefferson during the summertime, and the education system's not the same. The food that you eat is almost like truly cafeteria food. The bathrooms and everything is just completely different. When you leave your elementary school and you go home to nothing. And not only do you go home to nothing, you go home to being harassed for just being in your community. You go home to not having that playground, not having that community center, not being able to go hang out with my friends. So you got to find something to do. And then you're told you're just being a thug because you're hanging out on the street corner, or you're a hooligan because you're throwing rocks somewhere because there's no playground. So I think since the Ferguson uprising, it has gave a lot of young people hope. It has gave a lot of young people their voices back that has been stumped on and taken away for so long. And we understand that it's not just street protests. What most people didn't see back last year is that we wasn't just doing street protests. That was hard organizing that many of us have never done before. So that took a lot of education, that took a lot of learning, that took a lot of sitting down with your peers and figuring out how to strategize, even when you don't necessarily agree. And from that, as we look a year later, like you say, it's just not street protests, but they will continue because we understand. You got to have some disruption to make people feel uncomfortable. If people are comfortable for so long, do you think anything's going to change? Nope. Until they feel uncomfortable and they see these young people are actually maybe collecting signatures to recall someone, or going to classrooms and having those conversations with other young people, or finding the support like Brittany Packnett has been with helping like Clifton Kenny go to college and get an education, something he's been wanting to do. So it's deeper than just protest, and I wish people can see that, but young people are on the move. Young people are serious, and we won't change. If it's not the commission, it's the streets. If it's not the streets, it's books and breakfast. If it's not books and breakfast, it's meeting with Bernie Sanders to talk about these same issues that we have going on in our community. Young people are tired of the same old, and we're not going away.
I think we've got a follow-up to that. Go ahead.
That democracy that you're talking about is what privileges the majority at the expense of the minority, and that's how we got here.
We'll be back in just a moment as we continue our conversation on the recently released Ferguson Commission report. My guests are Pastor Willis Johnson, Ferguson Mayor James Knowles, Ferguson Commission members activist Rasheen Aldridge, and police officer Byron Watson, along with political science professor Terry Jones of the University of Missouri, St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our town hall meeting in downtown Ferguson at Wellspring Church. We're continuing our conversation on the Ferguson Commission report, a call to action following the shooting death of Michael Brown in August of 2014. I'm going to ask Delina to come to the microphone, please.
Hello.
Hello.
And thank you for having this. I have a Ferguson business in Ferguson, directly around the corner from Canfield on West Florissant. First, I disagree with that there's been constructive leadership with this protest. My business has been affected on the highest level that a business could be affected. I've been in Ferguson for over 20 years. I graduated from McClure. I drive through Ferguson all these years, all this time. Grew up in Ferguson. My question, you said something about the French and the Maria. I happen to disagree. For one, as we stood there in our businesses distressed, these two people were right around the corner from us, and they did not even address our businesses. They did not come in. They didn't say sorry. They didn't say anything to us in concern of our business, where we pay taxes, where we serve the community and people outside of the community. So I question that leadership. There was also statements about the protest is needed and it needs to continue. So then I ask you, who's going to support my daughter when she goes to college next year if these protests continue on West Florissant? I disagree with the order of how things is done. Not a protester came to any of the business to say, you know, I understand this is affecting you all's businesses. I understand that people say, oh, there's two type of protests. But may I ask you, if I stand and walk with a person that is stealing in the daytime and I also see them at nighttime but I'm not with them, what's the difference? And how do you know the difference? Now, I'm not saying that protest is not needed, but there should be an order. For example, why isn't there statements or, like flyers or just anything letting us know, hey, on this day, we will be operating in the street, taking up all of your customer space, filling your parking lot with all of our cars. I hear people laughing. Because when you are not affected, do you understand what I'm saying, brother? When you do not take this home and your children are suffering and your family is suffering, then you can laugh like these people over here, but it's not funny. It's not funny. So, unfortunately, Brother Rashid, not all protesters turn out like you, young man. So that's my concern with this and with this ongoing. Will there be order? And will there be concern for the businesses and the residents who dwell here and have been for years?
Rashid, would you like to respond? And then, go ahead.
Thank you first for inviting me into your house. To your point, let me clarify quickly. I think you probably got my last comment confused. I didn't say that Maria or Mayor Knows or Antonio was effective leaders in the process. It was more responding back to the recommendations and their comments to them. To your comment, let me first personally say I'm sorry for what happened to your business. The protesters got grouped with a lot of individuals at the time. There are several protesters out in the streets that was out there doing it for the right reasons. There are several individuals in the streets that you no longer see, and that's why businesses are no longer being burnt down. I'm not trying to take away from your business because I'm sure you put a lot of hard work and a lot of time and a lot of effort to that. But it's hard to give an order. I know we tried during Ferguson October. We had text alerts. We said text his number so you could know about the actions. It's only so much that we can do as protesters. At the same time, the people in power, like you say, Maria and them was around the corner and all that. The people in power, and I'm not talking about Maria, but it was people in power that could have actually did something from possibly stopping businesses getting looted and burned down. I remember me and several other protesters, and there's pictures out there standing in front of Sam's Meat Market, while other individuals who may not care about the situation took advantage of that. But at the same time, National Guards is right there in the middle of West Florissant, staring at people running up and down the streets, grabbing from these businesses. I remember being in the parking lot when the no indictment happened, and I seen trash cans get lit on fire, but I seen officers also on the other side. So I seen either people in power who could have actually did something to call the state of an emergency when it was really needed, or I seen law enforcement where they could have stepped up and stopped those businesses from getting looted or burned down and didn't do anything. And that was firsthand, standing there, right here outside West Florissant, not doing anything, while people was going into these businesses. All the protesters wasn't doing that. And I'm pretty sure a lot of protesters that next day came out to clean up, like we did many a days after West Florissant, when people, it was all people around the St. Louis area. We talking North City came to Ferguson. You got to remember, people took advantage of it. But it was the ones, and that you continue to see, like myself, it was the ones that woke up early in the morning that was serious about justice, that picked up the trash, that cleaned up. Not everyone.
They were people that lived in the surrounding areas. And I'm not sure if you noticed, but just on August 9th, there was another incident in the same plaza. So it's no disrespect or anything to the protest. I'm not stating that. I'm just saying that other things need to be taken into consideration and recognized.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you would think, though, with this last year, the people in power that could make those changes happen. I mean, I'm just a firm believer in it don't end in policy, but policy has a huge impact on the way we live on a day-to-day basis. And as we look in Jeff City, they didn't do nothing. Other states around actually did something locally. I mean, I don't know what was going on in Ferguson locally, but we still continue to see these same issues. So, like I say, I'm all a firm believer in people in power should have actually stepped up and also did something.
Thank you for your comment and question, ma'am. Pastor, go ahead. You want to make a comment.
I just, these are the challenges that continue to be present in our community in which we live, we work, and the system. As I sit here, I feel like, and it's not intended, I know it's you were just speaking, but I feel like, you know, the folks who are most vulnerable and who are being victimized are left to have to reconcile and recover amongst themselves. He's right. He's right about the system. I live over here on South Florissant. When they didn't want something to happen, it didn't happen. I was in Clayton. Didn't nothing get touched. And I'm sorry, sister, as I've said to this community in a year or so ago when somebody else wouldn't say it's sorry, I'm sorry for you. That's what I was mad about, because at the end of the day, we here in front of everybody else having a family conversation, forced to have to deal with each other when at the end of the day, all of us are being done wrong. And they make us feel bad, like we got to feel bad about telling somebody we mad about them not doing nothing. And then we got to enact our own kind of response to it, limited and forced in the only space that we have, which is a space that you occupy. And nobody, and I said this the other night as a presentation I was doing, someone asked me, well, why were they burning up their own community? Well, first of all, you've identified in this conversation that most of the folk who were doing the stuff that was detrimental and disrespectful, this ain't their community. And even sometimes, even when you live in a community, I'm just in this. I really should have let this go and called y'all after this. Because this is a family conversation, and I invite you to come to the Center for the Social Empowerment and Justice, which is on the other side of this building, because what we're trying to do is we have to have conversations and exercises that work through these things. The legislature ain't going to fix this intercultural, intra-community kind of issue. We have to begin to understand how the protests and how our enterprise need to intersect. And so what you're asking for, as I hear, is how do we agitate, but also we also empower or not take away from our brother and sister. The problem is we need to be coming up with these kind of suggestions and strategies, again, for our own survival, and we need to point to folk who are not helpful in that process.
That was what I was hearing in this a little bit. Every time they're not going to stop protesting. Okay? And you don't deserve to have to augment or alter your business. I want to sit down with all of us and come up with a strategy so we all get fed and we all get free. Yeah. Wait a minute. You need to protect your business. But you know what, sister? Yeah. I want to protect your business so that young brothers and sisters who can't get $15 because it ain't never going to pass the legislature can have some place to get a job, because if they can't get a job first in Ferguson, they're not going to get a job anywhere. And if you can't find people to not only work in your business, but that can subsidize your business, and this just, again, this turned into a family conversation because we in public, but this is the situation across this community. And to go back to one other point early on, when it asked about, you know, the naming of Ferguson or whatever, this is what's being lost. The world, the region, is looking to us. It emanated here. This was the epicenter. This is where the shift was greatest. And so now we have to do, in the spirit of the parable, we have to, where there was injury, we need to send all resource, all rescue, all rejuvenation for revival to the source of that energy and give a model and a template for how we do this. And then the region can go from there. So I would invite you personally, Rasheed, the other group, you know, the three musketeers that's here, and everybody that's there, I want to sit down and sit down with you and whoever else and talk about the strategy of how we do and both in this community for our respective benefit.
Thank you, and forgive me if I don't find humor in economic loss.
We are getting to the point where we're going to have to wrap this up. There's one quick question I'd like to put to you, Byron. You know, is there a generational divide here between people like you and me and Rasheen? And if there is, that we don't get it, we don't get what these young people are thinking, and that is going to be a real impediment to progress?
I think until we really look at what we've been talking about here, I guess, the entire time, that keeps getting rehashed in different comments and statements, but it all boils down to hope. I keep using that word because I heard it so many times over the last 17 months or 17 town hall meetings that we were at, that people, the young people like Rasheed, that this generation, I will say, I'll go as far as to say that, is and Rasheed kind of helps all of us on the commission kind of guide us. We need to start listening to these young people because, you know, one of the things, they're not as dumb as some of us want to make them out to be. And I think they know a little bit more than we even give them credit for. When Rasheed was first on the commission and I first saw him, I'm like, what are we doing with a protester on the commission? You know, I mean, it was really kind of bizarre. But he taught us a lot of things. And we listened. We became like a family. All 16 of us became a family. And I think they would rather not have to do the protesting and the agitating if we can get people to come to the table and listen to these young people and not give them lip service and give them some actual results. I think we've been talked out. They're tired of talking. They now want to see some action. We need to sit down at the table with these young people. They are not going away. This is over a year. The whole civil rights movement didn't take this long. And so this is going to continue until we decide that we have a problem, and the problem is race. There's no secret about this anymore. And until we sit down and start talking about this issue that makes everybody so uncomfortable, we're going to be sitting here again this time next year. If we don't put some of these things that we've put out in this commission report, we'll be back here again next year having the same conversation as to why nothing happened.
As we wind this down, one final point that I'd like to have each of the panelists make. A lot of people in the audience are asking themselves and the people next to them, what can I do? A lot of people listening to this program are going to be saying, what can I do? I'll start with you, Terry, and just work the way down. Your best advice to someone who is asking that question, what can I do? Tell them, what can they do?
Read the report, particularly the signature items. Pick out no more than three items that you think are A, would be very beneficial, and B, are politically feasible and work with your state representative and state senator or whoever the accountable parties are and start advocating for those possibilities.
Beat the drum. Byron.
I would say copy down this website, stlouispositive.change. That is the commissioner's website. It will be up for the next 3 months. All of our meetings, all of our events, all of the things that we're going to be doing here through sunset on December the 31st, you can get the link to the Ferguson Report. I urge everyone to download that report, or like Rashid said, you can go on your mobile device if you're tech savvy and look at this report. We didn't do this report for it to just sit there. I want the citizens to see the work that we did. We use taxpayers' money to do this, and I think the taxpayers need to see the work that we did, because I think we did some things in there that are going to make some positive changes to St. Louis. And so I'd like for them to write down that website and download that commission report.
Nosheen.
To second what Byron said, stay in tune with the website, because we're not gone until December, but we really want to make sure that this work is done, not just commissioners. We need the help of the community. We can't do this work without any of you guys out there and many more across this region. Also going to forwardthroughferguson.org, actually putting some life to these recommendations and understand why it's important for some of these things to get passed and why it's important for them to get acted on. And if it's not the commission, if that's not where you feel that your line of work is, and once again, there's 198 recommendations. I know there's one or two. Continue to fight. Continue to fight, and just know that everyone has a role in this movement. Everyone has a role in making our region a better place. So don't just sit back and be asleep. It's time to wake up.
And we will put links to the websites that you've mentioned and others that are relevant on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Mayor Knowles?
I would have to echo what Dr. Jones said. You know, really focus on something, maybe two or three items that you think that you can make effective change. And go out and find, as you said, whoever it is, whether the accountable party is a state rep or a council person or the mayor, and take that opportunity to sit down and talk to them. You know, there is it doesn't have to be your legislator. And in fact, in some ways, maybe it shouldn't be your legislator. Maybe you should go out to Jefferson City, you should start knocking on doors, and find that champion who would be helpful to you and your group to getting something through the legislature. We're not going to get anything done sitting in silos. We're not going to get anything done sitting only with people that agree with us. You're going to have to go out there and find people who don't agree with you and engage them. You're going to have to sit down with them. And again, I think, as Dr. Jones mentioned earlier, start with the low-hanging fruit. Find those things that maybe people generally agree on, even though on the big things you might be far apart on. I think you can help build a lot of bridges that way. I think you can make some modest but significant progress that way. And hopefully those relationships will lead to future discussions over larger issues of change that you can see in the future. It's not going to be done overnight, but I think incrementally, I think you can see quite a bit.
Willis Johnson?
Just dare us to be the change. We need to. Justice is love in public. It's loving out loud, it's loving hard, and it's loving everyone.
Jason, do you want to add a final thought?
Well, I think it's just incentive. I have a son that's a year and a half old, and while I'm a reporter and the people on this stage are going to make the change that maybe is issued in the report, I just have to think to myself, when my son is 10, 15, 20 years old, do I want him to be in the community that we're in right now? And I know Mayor Knowles has a young son. I'm sure he thinks the same way. If the answer is yes, then we keep everything the same and nothing that we talked about will change. But if the answer is no, then I think each and every one of us will be incentivized to make change within our own spheres and communities ourselves. It's incentive.
It has to change. It's just too destructive not to be changed.
Hey, Mark, can I say just one quick thing?
Yes, sir.
Just to show you how committed I am on the Ferguson Commission, I'm here tonight. Tonight is my birthday, but I wanted to come because I think this is an important issue, and I'm here on my birthday.
And a very happy birthday to you, Byron Watson. I will not be so indelicate as to ask how old you are.
But I hope you have a great celebration, and thank you so much for being with us. I want to thank all of the panelists for being with us tonight. Pastor Willis Johnson for being a very generous and thoughtful host. Thank you, sir. Mayor James Knowles, thank you so much for being with us. The Ferguson Commission members, very important parts of this discussion tonight, Rasheen Aldridge and Police Officer Byron Watson, and Terry Jones, professor at University of Missouri, St. Louis. Thank you. Jason Rosenbaum, of course, thank you. Thanks to the Wellspring Church and its staff here in downtown Ferguson for hosting us here tonight. We'd also like to thank the many staff members of St. Louis Public Radio who are here tonight and thank them for their assistance. And thanks so much to the audience of Full House here at the church in Ferguson. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Don Marsh, and this is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.